I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
The way we talk about the climate crisis matters. When reporting about climate policy is confused and complacent, it enables people to remain confused and complacent. If we want people to act on behalf of the environment, we need them to have reliable and actionable information.
In this episode, we are speaking with Emma Heiling, a master's student in environmental policy and co-founder of the organization Climate Talk. She's on a mission to get more people talking about the climate in the hope that it will lead to real action.
Here's Emma.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Emma. I am a 23-year-old from Vienna, from Austria, and I'm currently doing my master's in environmental policy at Sciences Po in Paris. And I'm also leading the NGO Climate Talk, which I co-founded about 2 years ago now. So a bit about my background. I grew up in Vienna, did all of my school years there. I then did my undergrad in the UK in Cambridge, where I studied land economy, which is a combination of law, economics, and environment. Then I did a gap year where I, as I mentioned, co-founded the organization Climate Talk. I did lots of other climate volunteering, mostly youth focused. I did an internship with Greenpeace for a couple of months, and then I started my master's, and this is why I am currently in Paris. To go into why I got into climate issues, how I got involved in climate activism, and maybe also what led to the founding of Climate Talk, I'm going to start with my school years, since I was already aware of climate issues in school. But back then, I mostly looked into the area of animal agriculture as one of the most important contributors, as I am and already was back then very passionate about animal rights. And then at uni, I really realized the urgency of acting on the climate crisis. And a number of things happen at the same time to make me realize this urgency. So first, we had the IPCC report, like the 1.5 degree special report being released, where it basically became clear that we only have a decade left to being able to realistically, semi-realistically reach the 1.5 degree target. Then Greta Thunberg started school striking, and you had the whole Fridays for Future movement, which obviously got a lot of attention. And you had other groups being formed, like Extinction Rebellion, also highlighting the urgency of the climate crisis. And all of these things combined got me more and more, well, interested, and also made me realize that this is the thing that I need to focus my time on, because if we don't act on this now, it will be too late. And I don't want to look back in 10 years, in 15 years, thinking, well, we would have still had the chance to avoid the biggest catastrophes back then, but I didn't do anything, or I thought something else was more important. So this is how I recognize the importance of climate policy, locally, regionally, nationally, internationally, on all different levels. And in my final year, this should have been the year of COP26, my final year of university at Cambridge. And it was happening in Glasgow, obviously very relevant. It was based in the UK, and international climate policy seemed very close to where it was based, actually. And then I realized, when reading environmental news, I was quite active in different environmental societies. I realized more and more that I actually did not know much of the actual agreements, concepts, articles that people were discussing on an international climate policy level. I was basically missing some keystones of what is needed for a proper understanding of climate policy. And this is why two of us got together back in, well, April 2020, just after COVID started. So during the first lockdown, just before our final exams, to build a platform that enables especially young people to understand climate policy, even if they have no background in studying climate policy, And we wanted to create short form content that explains concepts and terms in an easy and accessible way. And that's basically how Climate Talk was born. And we wanted this to be an accessible platform, an inclusive platform that provides young people both with information, but also with opportunities where they can get active, because it's quite frustrating if you read all of these news and then you don't know what do you do and where can you start acting.
That's so exciting. I can't imagine how many billions of people out there want to get climate policy explained to them in simple terms. You know, I think even myself, like 15, 20 years ago, I was chairing a green committee for our community board, you know, and we spent years trying to really peel apart what needs to be done, you know, and what is actually happening. I wonder if you could explain to our audience the key takeaways that you discovered during that early learning process.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of things that need to be done, to be honest. It's probably impossible to summarize all of them in a couple of minutes. I think one of the most important things that needs to change on an international level, both with a policy level, with the media, with the general, how it's communicated to the public, is what I mentioned before, but the urgency of this crisis. What we realized with COVID, for example, is that at least everybody realized that this was affecting them personally. Countries realized that this would affect the way they would be able to do well, to run their economy, to run their country, that would affect jobs, that would affect production, that would affect everything. And this is the same and even 1,000 times worse for the climate crisis. However, it's barely present in, it's getting a bit better, but it's still comparatively barely present in the media. It is barely communicated in a way where everybody would feel that this is something that affects them. It's presented maybe as something that is, well, going to happen sometime in the future, but it's actually happening now. There are people, especially in the global south, that countries that are already extremely affected by the climate emergency. And we are feeling the same in Europe. We're feeling the increase in heat waves. We're feeling how the temperature increases every year. We almost had the driest March since the records were started in Austria this year. So you definitely see how we're already affected by this crisis. However, it's sort of often being treated as separate from the climate policies that we need to enact. And a second thing that I would mention and highlight is the justice aspect, because this has to be present in every single conversation. And there are obviously different levels. There is one, the justice aspect of climate justice in the global south and countries that have contributed the least, however, are affected the most by this crisis and are able to adapt the least and don't have the financial means to adapt, yet they are facing the biggest consequences.
Well, I wanted to add that what's so surprising to me, you see, when we look back, talking about climate emissions, for example, CO2 emissions, where we know we need to reduce. We know we have basic living way beyond our biological credit card it's over indebted. Right? I think we know that for years and years, and yet, whenever there is a massive decrease in CO2 emissions, was actually caused by disaster. So something like financial crisis, the volcanoes erupting, pandemic. But never by agreement. Like Paris Agreement actually has yet not reduced worldwide emissions. I mean, what are we, or what's your platform? I guess what you're trying to do is to explain policy in a way that people can act, but then so far we haven't. What do you think? What's the change?
Just turning to policy, I just wanted to know, which policies do you think are the most urgent? Like the one existing policies that are out there already, which ones are the most urgent and why?
I mean, I think point number one, which is tying on to what you were saying, Stephanie, is we need to keep fossil fuels in the ground. We cannot rely on technologies in the future. We have an existing carbon budget that we are exploiting at an unimaginable pace. And we are still paying, we're still investing for research in new oil fields. We're still investing in new fossil fuels, in new coal plants. We are not spending the money in alternatives. It's crazy to imagine how many trillions of dollars, euros every year are spent on fossil fuel subsidies. We are subsidizing this incredibly destructive behavior that will, in the end, will cost us our place to live. And this is something financially that I think is most urgent. We need to shift drastically and very quickly what we invest in, because, well, unfortunately, but the society we live in today is directed by money. The economy goes where the money goes. The political decisions are based where the money is located. We need to start investing massively in alternatives, especially on an energy level. So I would say point number one is definitely dealing with this energy transition crisis that we have, because we're not dealing with it at the pace that we need to. And secondly, which is something that I mentioned at the very beginning, is what we need to deal with is the effect of agriculture, and especially animal agriculture. If you look at the massive impact, very negative impact that this has, not only on climate, but also other environmental problems. If you look at the comparative impact of one beef burger to one like plant-based alternative, it's crazy. And to think that we could just as easily just choose something else, which would have an incredible impact. And we are still subsidizing those harmful behaviors as well, which goes back to the financial aspect. So I think there are a couple of very urgent policies that need to be put in place. Of course, always keeping the justice aspect in mind as well, which I mentioned previously.
When we talk about carbon reduction policy, for example, shifting those energy sources, what is a policy that's effective that actually deters people from the money side of decision making? Like, is there policies at the economic level that you think are more effective, or just these carbon reduction targets? You know, how can we really incentivize the enforcement and carrying out of these agreements?
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent question. And I guess it depends on the exact setting that you're in, because it will depend on the country that you're looking at, on the region that you're looking at, because countries that are, for example, very dependent on oil and gas for their economy will need different incentives than countries who already have alternatives available and who, for example, can easily develop, relatively easily develop a form of renewable energy, be it solar, be it wind, be it something else. But that really depends on the underlying situation in that country, what makes sense to incentivize and where you should start to address the issue and what the root of the issue really is. But I would say, as an overall conclusion, that we cannot keep seeing this option of still falling back onto fossil fuels and seeing the short-term profits, the short-term benefits, even if it might seem more expensive in the short term. It's what we've seen with COVID as well. Suddenly, there were trillions available to invest in research that we'd never thought was possible, to develop a vaccine or several vaccines in a time period that wasn't, like, people would have said this is impossible before this crisis. In other countries, I think it was in China, they were able to build up a hospital in the space of days. Suddenly things were possible that we thought weren't, because we had the money available, because we we calculated the cost of not acting in the face of this crisis rather than the cost of acting, which I think is something that we're missing in the whole climate debate, is that we are still not thinking about what are the costs if we don't act now. It is never compared to the costs that we will face in the future. It is rather compared to what can we invest the money in instead, thinking of the short-term time span in 5 years, which means that we need to plan longer term in advance in every situation. We need to have a proper cost-benefit analysis using business terms, because if you would actually look at the costs and the benefits of these investments, it would make sense. It would make financial sense if you look at the costs that come up in 7, 10, 20, 30, 50 years' time, and not just the costs that arise in the next 3 to 5 years.
So do you believe, or is your hope in that we could see a very drastic sudden change?
I mean, I think we're all hoping for that. It's we are definitely all hoping for that. The question is, what does it take? And I think it's what would be necessary. And the question is, does it take a huge catastrophe that everybody suddenly realizes that we need to act, and this is very urgent, and there is nothing that is more important than acting on this right now, because now you've always had things that were more important and seemed more urgent in the short term, which obviously were understandable. I mean, we've had a bunch of crises in the past years. We've had COVID, now we have the Ukraine war, which is affecting the world, especially Europe, dramatically. But we cannot leave the climate crisis out of sight, and we cannot, if we keep prioritizing financially the other crises that might come up in the next few years, then it will be too late. So I think the question is, does this shift happen with a giant catastrophe or some like a big event, negative, like a crisis that affects everybody and that shifts the political attention? Or does it happen when a significant, large enough number of people go out and actually protest, change their behavior, actively voice their opinions so that the government really sees that this has the voters support this, because that's the only reason, unfortunately, why many governments, why many politicians take decisions, is if they think this will get public support. And if there are big movements, big enough for there to be a sudden shift, that could potentially be an option. Another thing would be, which probably goes in line with the shift in public opinion and public action, is the media. If the media shifts and there is more media attention onto the climate crisis, the climate emergency, different developments like we've had during this, especially the first year of the COVID crisis, where we had reports of daily developments, lengthy news series dedicated to this topic. We were tracking the development. We were tracking the cases every day, just like we should be tracking emissions every day. We were tracking the deaths every day, just like we should be tracking the deaths of the climate crisis, because a lot of people die of climate issues every single day. We were tracking all of those developments. We were tracking the solutions that were found. We were tracking how the vaccines developed. We were tracking the rollout. We paid for the vaccine so that everybody had free access to this alternative, to this solution. So I think if we have this shift in the media as well, this could provide this spark, this shift that's needed to more urgent action, to more urgency.
Such an amazing, good point. You know, both points that you've just raised, which is we should focus on the now versus then comparison, the cost comparison, which most people in today's economy won't do that because we're just not trained to do. That's basically a collective process versus an individual process, right? That's a policymaking process. Because as an individual, you're always looking at your personal pocketbook. You know, what is the budget, and what's the payoff, what's the cost? And so we have to shift to large groups moving to that policy. But this second idea that we need to have daily tracking is really spectacular. The way we did it with the pandemic, we all see those charts over and over again. And we actually have to look for those charts in books to see it on climate change or on websites. We have to go out and seek it out. And even then, it's very difficult. You know, there's not a standard set of indices like, here's how we're doing on climate today. You know, here, you know, drilling down to your local neighborhood and then back out to the larger planet. But, and I think those are both wonderful kind of clear objectives for how we could communicate and talk about climate change. How do you see your generation playing a bigger role in that? Because I think our generation is kind of weirdly stuck in this old model. Like, you know, I mean our generation, meaning all generations older than you. So we're kind of like stuck in this model of looking at things the old ways. We have these glasses on that kind of prevent us from making those kind of now or later discussions or decisions. What is your generation going to bring to that table that's different? How are you going to depart from the old traditions of pay later, buy now?
I mean, I think firstly, by simply having different priorities, because for what the current generation in power, for them, pay later means, well, our generation will pay, the future generations will pay. So we necessarily have a different perspective on that, because we will be the ones affected. We are the ones in that situation. We are affected by the decisions that are taken today, by the priorities that are being set today that do not put intergenerational justice at the heart of things, but that puts the current profit and the benefit for shareholders and big companies and corporations and maybe government in the voting polls have put this at the center of priority. And this is what we necessarily bring to the table, even automatically, I would say, that we have this different, that we have this different perspective. And I think we need young people to be engaged meaningfully in the development and implementation of all climate and environmental policies and decisions, because our future on this planet is being decided. And if young people and the next generation is not involved in this, that is quite ironic if you look at it in an objective way.
Yeah, maybe we need a kind of a gap year for all worldwide politicians and leaders, and like let the new generation have 1 year of leadership and see what would come out of it, you know, because that would maybe accelerate, like, okay, we need to wait another 20 years until we are basically elected into office, but then the damage is done by then. So
yeah, a gap year for politicians, I love that. well, you could also give a gap year to all millennials and say, this is your year of climate work, you know, and see what happens with that too. You know, instead of going into the army, you can work on climate.
Well, maybe the army will work on climate. I guess that is, well, you know, at the moment they're working on, yeah, different stuff. Anyways.
So, Emma, how could we support you? Like, you know, when obviously the big money is in older generations, right? Older generations still hold the purse strings and the policy strings. And obviously our political systems across the world are incredibly polarized, such that they're almost ineffective on policy making, unless there's a crisis, in which case, you know, like pandemic, we make things happen. But in general, I would say we're in a stagnated political state. How can we help you mobilize the world around climate?
The number one thing is to not see this as a old people versus young people kind of situation, but to all mobilize together, to join the people that are mobilizing in this climate movement, to support the voices of young people, to actually notice if there is no young person on the table when discussing something that would be relevant, very relevant to young people's future, to voice that something needs to change, to be active, if you're working somewhere where there would be an opportunity to involve young people, to make it happen. If this comes from the inside, things happen so much more quickly than if you have to keep pushing from the outside to be sort of let in.
Sorry, just kind of, because, you know, time is always running out, not just on a global level, but also on our podcast. So we wanted to know a little bit more about the Climate Talk you founded.
Yeah, so we're at Climate Talk. We've now existed for almost 2 years, but 1 year officially, because it's been 1 year since we've been officially registered. We are an international nonprofit organization, a youth-led nonprofit organization with now more than over 100 volunteers internationally. And we focus on two types of content, if I try to summarize this broadly. First, we focus on climate policy education. And second, we focus on climate action and careers. This links back to what I said at the very beginning, is that we want to provide young people not only with the knowledge and the understanding, but also what to do with this and how can you get active? How can you start a climate education or a climate career? And how can you get active in this field? And so what we do is we have a publication where we continuously publish articles, short and accessible, on different climate policy issues, policy topics. These articles are also written by young people, but they're obviously reviewed and checked by our team, because we want young people to not only be engaged passively, but also actively in the learning process, because that changes everything if you are actively involved in trying to understand something. And once you've understood it, to then explain it to other people. So this is the double learning aspect. And then we have three projects in our climate policy and education section. One is focusing on EU policy, in particular the Fit for 55 package. One is focusing on COP27, which is a follow-up from our COP26 project from last year, which was very successful. And we actually went to COP, which was amazing. And then we have a very new project, which will only be officially launching in May, which is called the Youth Climate Lawsuits Database, where we want to gather youth climate lawsuits in a database to show what young people have been able to do, which arguments they're using to fight corporations, but also political commitments in court. And so we want to gather all of these lawsuits in a database, also explaining the cases and the arguments behind them. And then we have three projects on the second part, which is climate action careers, which is on the one hand focusing on education. So we have a climate at uni project where we have created a uni courses map with over 400 university courses now, which we're continuously updating and expanding, focused on climate policy around the world. And you can see what you what you'd be interested in. You can filter your different interests. And we also have personalized reviews from recent or current students in these courses. Not all yet, but we're building up a database. Then we have one section focusing on careers and internships, where we currently post new internship opportunities every month. And then we have a project on youth climate action, where we highlight different projects from young people around the world, what they're doing and how you can get active, and sort of trying to inspire young people to get active in their community.
Wow, that's a lot. I love it. It's great. I wished I had that at hand when I was 20, you know, that was would have been very helpful.
Aren't you inspired by Emma? Come on.
Oh, absolutely. Come on. I think it's fantastic. And it's really also about time. not criticizing you, Emma. Just, you know, really fantastic that someone from the generation who, as she's saying, is basically also hit most, is gearing up and providing that kind of information. And you know what? I don't think you can stress it any less than how important these kind of movements, what Emma is creating, are.
Yeah.
They have always pushed the needle, whether this was the 60s or, you know, even before that, and 70s. There's always been tension in our society, right, mm-hmm. or societies. And one way of showing, hey, there's something not quite right, is demonstrating and you know,
but
going
what
out
I love,
on the street.
What I love about Emma is it's even more than demonstrating. She's actually bringing real data, real policy analysis, you know, breaking it down into to information that people can understand what it is we're fighting for and how we are actually going to tackle climate change. Because we've all learned lately, I mean, some movements make a huge difference, like the Me Too movement, which is really tied to women speaking out when they hadn't spoken out before, like telling stories and millions of data points around their stories.
It's more than that. I think it's actually making stuff which is underlying, you know, visible.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And when you give that thing a voice and it appears, oh yeah, I've experienced that too. And I think it will, quite frankly, it will be the same with Emma is doing with, oh my God, yeah, we better do something now. Because now we can still shift the needle.
I agree. But I also think that she's really making it effective. For example, let's talk about an ineffective campaign, which is, for example, the 99%. What was that called? What did we call that? The 99% campaign.
I have no idea. What do you talk about?
The 1%. What was it called?
I don't know.
Occupy. The Occupy movement, right? A huge movement all over the place, but didn't actually move the needle because there wasn't a cogent policy behind that they were advocating right. for. And here we have someone who's a young person who's saying, look, the movement is really critical, but the policy implications and how we craft policy and what are the data points and what are our talking points related to that policy that we want to get passed is critical to a successful movement. And I think that that is the magic sauce, a secret sauce of making a movement really work. And so I'm really excited that she's starting to do that. We need more people to get on board with policy information and not just I'm against climate change or don't drive your car, but what are the actual policies at the city level, at the state level, at the national level, at the treaty level that we have to pass? And she educates us about that stuff. And believe me, it takes a long time. I spend years trying to figure out what the heck are we doing with climate, you know? Once you know it's happening.
Yeah, so Emma's leading the way off the main road, and let's just hope more and more people join. Just join the movement, everyone. I mean it.
We are an independent, listener-supported podcast.
Brought to you by Game Changers, www.gamechangers.world. For the price of one latte per month, you can help fuel our work and keep our content untainted by commercial interests.
For more exclusive content, join us on patreon.com or click donate on potofgold.world.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul. I'm Mel Wymore.
And I'm Stephanie Overbeck.
Thanks for listening.